Good afternoon. Welcome to the next episode of the NREA Rural Voice podcast. We are actually coming to you in crazy times, as always, but things in DC are crazy. Things across our country are crazy. But we hope to bring a little sanity to this conversation, and we're going to introduce you to some legislative action that took place many, many years ago. But we're looking at new solutions to solve old problems in a lot of ways, and old solutions to solve new problems. So today we are sponsored by My Credentials, micro credentialing, online teacher development, professional development, credentialing for your teachers at an affordable rate. I do know the CEO and founder. He might be with us on the podcast. I don't know for sure. We'll let him verify that information here in a second. But it's always good to be here with Dr. Chris Silver from the University of the South, former SEC football member, and Jared Bigham, good friend of mine, my credential maybe, also late to podcast. But guys, welcome. Glad you're here with us today. Let's kind of dig in. I'm going to introduce our guest, but kind of a did you know, Chris, did you know that Suwannee was in the SEC at one time?
I did actually. There was an article that was talking about, I think they went against Alabama like 100 years ago or something.
Yeah, you need to look it up.
Was it ping pong? Was it a ping pong team?
No, it was football.
It was football, and they actually played a lot of games and actually won they might have won the conference one year. This was before live radio and television, so we can't give them too much credit.
Yep, it's true.
All right, we're going to introduce our guest today. This is one of my new good friends. Met this gentleman probably a month or two ago and had become a good friend of mine. Wanted him to do the show, wanted him to talk about what he's passionate about. So we want to welcome Jamie Green to our podcast. And Jamie, tell us where you work, what part of the country you're from, and a little bit about your school district.
So I live in very northern rural California. 80% of our county, which is the site of Rhode Island, which is Trinity County, is federal lands. I've been here for 26 years. I've been a teacher, coach, counselor, and for the last 5 years, I have served as the superintendent of Trinity Alps Unified School District.
So let's give people an idea. The size of your school district is what, K-12?
So we have K-12, we have 700 students, and we send buses an hour each way in four different directions. Our school district encompasses over 1,700 square miles, so it's a little bit different than what they do in the cities.
Wow. Give us an idea. What's your longest bus route?
It's an hour and a half, one way, depending on. But if you have a rock slide or you got snow, you're up to 2 hours. Wow. And we send them all four directions. We pretty much have a compass. We point in each direction and go get our kids.
Holy cow. So that puts a little context for you folks, especially that are east of the Mississippi. Flatlanders as well, to understand that work. That's interesting. So the main reason we're on here, and I want you to kind of give a brief history. We're here to talk about the Secure Rules Act and a proposal that you brought forward in California this year, and then kind of give us the brief history and we'll talk about what we're working on, and so people may understand or not understand.
Yes, sir. We had a great visit. We traveled with the LA Times back to Washington, D.C., and we brought five superintendents from four different counties in rural California, and we brought a business manager. And we were able to meet with legislators, congressmen, senators, and so surprised at how much they care about kids, you know, just openly care about kids. So the Secure Rural Schools Act was voted in May 23rd of 1908 under the tutelage of the great President Teddy Roosevelt. And he created the national park system, and he also created the national forest. So the national forests were to be used by everyone. And so when he determined that he was going to take this land, it was never going to be public. And since schools financing is based on property taxes of people that surround the school, he realized in 1908, he'd have to go to Congress with the help of NREA that was founded in 1907. So they worked together on this 115 years ago. The anniversary is on May 23rd. And basically the first bill that went through said that 25% of all wealth created on national forest lands would go to the schools. which was a substantial amount when you had old growth timber and you had mining and you had cattle grazing. You know, it's there was a lot of money made there. So in 1908, there wasn't a problem. There was equity between urban and rural. Well, now, if you take the stats of what it costs to educate students and you compare these 4,400 schools that get Secure Rural Schools Act monies, there's a big disparity between rural and urban. And so we all know kids are our futures. Who is going to be the one who solves cancer someday? Is it a rural school or is it an urban school? We shouldn't be doing that. All kids should have the same opportunity in this great country. So the Secure Rural Schools Act worked really well until the mid-1980s when environmental concerns hit. There wasn't as much timber. There was increasing habitat on different endangered species. So after that, they basically turned it into what was called the Forest Reserve. And then the government was just given allotment. They were no longer making money off of the lands. And so they were giving an allotment. So that worked well till about 10 years ago. And then about 10 years ago, it was decided that we need to wean these 4,400 school districts off of this Forest Reserve money or Secure Rural Schools Act money. And so when we went to DC, we asked a question. We talked to legislators and I asked them, I said, so the idea is here, since we run our school based on property tax and 4,400 school districts cannot tax federal land, that money will never come in. There's not money coming from anywhere else. How are you weaning us off of that? What exactly are we supposed to do? So we went back to Washington with the proposal.
Jamie, let me interrupt just 1 second for clarification for our listeners that don't know. So the money you were getting, explain how you were getting money from natural resources like timber for those that don't aren't familiar with a situation like that.
So one of four kids, so you know this, go to a rural school in America. Okay. The base of Native American population is there. So the equity thing is what started me going on this issue. So the federal government gives you federal funds based on a formula. And so it was based on what they did with timber before. So 4,400 school districts have relied on this money because they have nowhere else to get it. They can't go tax. So when we went to DC, we said, we want to be part of a solution, not part of a problem. Can you put a windmill on federal land and create money? Absolutely. Can you select cut for us? If clear cutting is not what people want, can you select cut? Can you mine? Can you go back on federal lands and can you make money off of it? Obviously you can. So you also create infrastructure. So if they start allowing money to be made off the federal lands, then the schools could get that allotment again.
Yeah. I live in a county with the exact situation that you're talking about. We 2/3 of our county is the Cherokee National Forest. And so we don't have any land really that's dedicated to manufacturing and things like that. I mean, but you've got that other third that either has farmland on it or private property. And the biggest employer on my end of the county is the school district and the nursing home. So we're very dependent on that federal money, but it's you like you said, you can't get property tax because so little of the county is actually private property. And you got that national forest that if they, you know, you got locals that don't like clear cutting, but that's the one resource, you know, that you can get money coming out of those lands. So that, I think that's a good context for people to understand that in some of the rural situations and people we work with, if they're not in some of these mountainous areas, they don't understand that dynamic that you're working with. So what was the response when you went to DC? What was, I mean, I know you probably can't find a policymaker that's going to say, oh, no, I'm anti-school or funding, but were there any actionable steps, taking concrete things they did beyond just saying, yeah, we love kids, we want to help kids?
It was heartwarming to go talk to Democrats and Republicans. They don't know the history. Their job is they're not focusing on secure rural schools. So once we explained, how do you want to wean us off of it? They understood they couldn't. And if that money gets cut, which it did for one time in the last 115 years, it didn't come. That was in the year 2016. And thousands of people were laid off because of it. So you look at that systemically of losing employees, not being able to teach kids. We're just trying to be very preventative here. The monies are good for one more year. So next school year, these Secure Rural Schools Act monies will come to these 4,400 districts. If a bill is not passed, it goes to zero or next to zero, maybe 20,000.
So Jamie, talk to us about the 2004 levels. I know you brought that up when we were meeting in D.C., so go ahead and hit on
that. I researched this for over a year before we went to D.C., and I looked at it in 1908. Obviously, you're cutting forests that are completely full, so the 25%, people didn't talk about it for a very long time, 50, 75 years. It was just accepted, and it was great, and the schools were funded, and everything was wonderful. And 2004, I think, is about the time people started having the idea that we can't sustain this. Well, we need to sustain education. So they couldn't sustain giving that money amount because the national forests were not producing any income. And so in my district, which is small, with the inflation calculator in 2004, my district received $2 million, $2 million to educate students. And in this year, 2023, we received $525,000. So that has been a 75% drop from 2004 to 2023. And really the 2023 numbers, it's very difficult to run a school on it.
I would just say, looking at some of the documents that you've put together in your research, and just even forget about the weaning off part, the inflation piece is what I was noticing. Like, they're using a budget that's almost 100 years old, an allocation that's almost 100 years old. So it really should be double. If it was following inflation, be double what you're even were getting. So it's just mind boggling, I guess, that people, the red flag hasn't gone up for now. So I'm sure they're very appreciative of you to champion this cause. And so what have you seen as a major hurdle in this? If you got policymakers or we got to do something, what's the hurdle from keeping them from just doing it?
Well, I think the hurdle is to talk about the debt ceiling, but I'm going to be honest, we went the first time, and then the second time we went back with a team from my district and a neighboring county for 3 days. Then we hooked up with NREA for 4 or 5 days, and then we stayed 3 days later. You know, if you want something bad enough, you got to get the message out there. We talked to senators from different states. Not one person said they wouldn't vote for it. They said this is budget dust. So what we believe is happening is a congressman from Arkansas has paired up with Congressman LaMalfa from California to put this as part of a farm bill. So we're really hoping that that goes forward there. And then in talking to Senator Feinstein's office, they said it would be good to not have both these bills from California, since it goes over 38 states, right? 38 states, 4,400 school districts. So it looks like Mr. Crapo from Idaho and Mr. Wyden is what we've heard. I'm not there, that they also will be working on a bill in the Senate. And then we were able to be blessed to go to the White House, and we were able to talk to an assistant there. I'm telling you, not one person said we're not for this. All of them, we explained it to them. And I think the general American, the citizen, doesn't understand. Oh, these schools are surrounded by land they can't tax. So the only way it can work is what the government did 115 years ago, right? I mean, they came out and said there's going to be an equity gap between rural and urban schools, and there absolutely is one. And then if you look at rural America, you guys, we don't have broadband. So all these people that get to work from home, they can't raise their kids in my community. That's another thing. It's an economic thing. So if we bring broadband to education, we also bring enrollment. We also bring human beings here. We bring jobs here. Same thing with using federal lands. If we select cut logs, I have loggers, I have a mill, I have students. It's sustainable. So like I said, none of us are looking for a gift from the federal government. We just want them to put on their business hats and say, how can we make enough money off of this land, right? How can we make enough money off this land to support the schools? That's all we're looking for, is a partnership.
And I think that brings up a good point. But I'm not trying to be negative, but I want you to tell our listeners, if you don't receive these funds in 24 moving forward, what does it do to your district on staff cuts alone?
Yeah, and in my district, we have to plan out 3 years. So we haven't laid off anybody yet. We would have approximately 8 layoffs in my district. For seven,
how many teachers do you currently have in your district?
Offhand,
just a rough estimate. Yeah.
I think maybe we're at 30 or 40.
And you're talking about losing 8 staff members. That could
We would have to lose teachers. We'd have to lose maintenance staff. We'd have to lose librarians. You know, it'd be very difficult. And honestly, sir, that's why I'm being so proactive. One pound of proactiveness is worth 5 pounds of retroactiveness. If we can get this taken care of beforehand, we could save all these jobs for all these people. And more importantly, properly educate students with the right personnel and enough personnel.
And it also saves your community, right?
Absolutely. The economy of a rural town, we're one of the biggest employers.
Yeah.
That broadband issue is something, it's hard for me to believe that we still have pockets in our country that don't have access to high-speed internet, and especially since pandemic. And I wish more alarm bells would be ringing about this, because exactly like you said, I'm a parent that works from home. I go into the city maybe once every couple of weeks to an office, but primarily work from home because we do have broadband. And I know that there was a push after the pandemic to get more rural pockets access across the country, but we're still dealing with that, which I think might surprise a lot of people that still dealing with the access issue, especially since the pandemic. So what is there any, is this part of the package, or is that just something, you know, you're trying to put on the radar, or what's the?
I consider the people that work at the federal government part of my team. So when COVID hit, we went to school. We had to have doctors and nurses write stuff. We had 60 kids on a school bus. We went to school after the one shutdown. We didn't change our schedule, and we went to school full on. We had to close a couple times when we had major high cases. But the reality was, in rural America and Trinity County, we could not educate our kids if they were not in school. If they weren't in the seats, they simply wouldn't have got educated. So at that point, sir, we wrote a $22 million broadband grant to put towers in each community throughout Trinity County. And we've been denied twice, and we're currently on our third appeal. And I'm not going to take no for an answer for that. It's a federal grant. They're our friends. We don't have broadband. That's why they put the grant out there. And the last time they denied us without review. So we said, that's not acceptable. We're going to continue pushing until we get broadband in Trinity County, not only for the students. We live in one of the most beautiful places on earth. We have snow-capped mountains. We have lakes. We have high mountain lakes. We have rivers. We want to attract people to live here. We want their students here. We want an economy, and the school is a big part of that. So if we're properly funded, and broadband doesn't only help the students, it brings in some people that really enrich your community.
So let me, and Jared, you live this so much, and I'm going to, Jamie, this is a total compliment to you. People don't realize what rural superintendents do. People don't realize they're out there advocating for their schools like this. I'm sure, Jamie, you drive a bus. I'm sure you do a lot for your school district, but you're really an economic workforce development lead in your district. Jared, you give me a shout on that because I know your past work, but it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't think people understand that either. Then rural communities, the school district's the hub for so many things. I mean, it's the hub, not just for education, but so many local cultural things, an economic driver, workforce development driver. And so I applaud you for what you're doing, because if you weren't, I mean, there's not the manpower, honestly, or person power, I guess we say now, that to drive that work, you don't have an economic development person office in most of these rural communities to drive these conversations, these initiatives, and like a $22 million grant for broadband. So you're doing great work there and being a great leader for your students and your community. So keep up the good work, and I think you're going about it the right way. You're being very proactive, as you said, instead of retroactive.
We have two sayings in our district. One is, we will do whatever is best for kids, no matter what the outcome is. And the second one is, we are going to produce taxpayers, not tax consumers. And we're asking for the federal government to invest money in Trinity County. We will do a great job educating them. We'll get them trained in CTE, careers, concrete, linemen. We'll put people out that are doctors. That investment that they put in education is going to pay back tenfold. if we're looking at the country as a business model, invest in schools now, put the money in now, let those of us that are willing to do this job and love these kids, you're going to have a lot more taxpayers out there. Taxpayers is what runs the country. But if we underfund schools, we're in danger of not doing a good job, not preparing students, and they now become a tax consumer because we failed to get them ready for the working world. We have a big job to do in education, and we're proud to do it. But if we're underfunded, you know how that works.
Oh, yeah. I love that line. Actually, I thought I came up with that line by stealing it from somebody else, so maybe from Joe T. Wood. But I love that. Make taxpayers, not tax consumers.
100%. And everybody wants to be independent, right, sir? Nobody wants to be dependent on anybody else. Nobody wakes up and says, I don't want to make it on my own. I can't believe there's people that feel that way.
I agree 100%. You know, Jamie, I'm going to ask you, this question. If people want to, after listening to this, are you good with them reaching out to you directly, email to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We know superintendents are going to listen to this. We know people are going to listen to this, and they're going to be in this same case, and we want them to reach out. So, Jared, and I didn't prep you on this one, Jamie. This is a good one. I think I know your answer. But Jared's going to wrap this up with the question we ask every guest that comes on our show. And I will say this, you're probably one of the most energetic and passionate folks ever been on our podcast, and I appreciate it. And the first time I met you, and you may agree or disagree, I think we were on that call into California, and I said, we need to get you on our podcast. I think that was one of the first times.
Yeah.
So, Jared, hit him with the question of all questions, and I'm pretty sure I know his answer, but go ahead.
All right. So, I ask all our guests, if you're Harry Potter for a day, you had Harry Potter's wand, and you could wave that wand and do something in this space that you're working in. You only get one wave to do whatever you want to do. What would you do with that wave of the wand?
Well, sir, that is an easy one. I research, I use data, and I look at what amount of the federal government dollars goes to education. The key of our country, the future of our country, what we are all going to be in the future, I would wave that wand and I would move the needle, because the federal government current budget is 2.9% goes towards education. 2.9% of federal monies goes towards education. I would move that wand up to 8%, which would give everybody full funding on IDEA special ed. It would fund rural schools. It would put broadband. It would help us with the mental health crisis. You give me that wand, I'll wave it right now. Let's go from 2.9 and move that needle. We need help from our friends, and they are our friends. I'm going to tell you that, Democrat, Republican, they love children. We just have to be face-to-face talking to them. Those people have the toughest jobs in the world. They are patriots. Every congressman, every senator, they are putting everything on the line to serve us. It's our job to go to them and tell our stories. And then how they vote on it is how they vote on it. But I know darn well and good, by going to D.C. twice, I feel so much better about this country. I feel so good about this country and the future of it. We just need to continue the conversation with them. We need to help them to understand, raise the needle from 2.9, and everything we're talking about is going to be funded properly. A lot more taxpayers, less tax consumers, man.
Great answer.
I will tell you that 2.9% may be a slogan coming to your area from NREA, and Jamie will be part of that. So raising that. So Jared, close us out today. Unbelievable show. And thanks, Jamie, for being here. So Jared, close us out, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Jamie. This is, we don't get in policy issues a whole lot, but this was a great one to tackle for awareness for everyone in rural communities. Understand a little bit about the bigger dynamics behind the scenes of going with funding and just some of these challenges that rural communities deal with that are alike, you know, whether you're in northwest United States or southeast or Midwest, you're dealing with some of these similar issues, and funding is always at the heart of almost every conversation we have, whether it's funding or scheduling or whatever it might be. So thank you for making this a little more concrete for everyone and understanding some of these political levers and policy levers that need to be pulled to support rural schools. And so this was a great conversation. Look forward to our next episode coming up. We've been having some great guests, Dr. Pratt. And so we want to keep the ball rolling on that, and would love to have you back, Jamie, for an update on how things are going. I love your passion around just the work our policymakers are doing at the federal level. So we'd love an update after some more time has passed.
Sir, real quick, I want to thank you guys. When we went to Washington the second time and we got to go with Kentucky and Tennessee and Texas, something beautiful is happening in this country. Alan Pratt is an amazing human being, and he's organizing everybody. So no longer is Maine going alone. No longer is California going alone. I tip my hat to what you guys are doing for children. It's something beautiful, and I could feel it's going to come through for the kids all throughout the country. So, Alan, thank you so much for your hard work, man.
Yeah, Alan.
I appreciate that. But, I mean, it's the people that do the work, and it's fun times. And this is, you know, Jared and I started dealing with this stuff probably in 2010, 2011. Is that right, Jared?
Yeah, we've been at it over a decade.
So it's good stuff. So thank you so much. And hey, tune in. We got some new guests coming. We do have some Department of Ed folks in D.C. heading our way on a Zoom soon. We'll have the new rural engagement person, Julia Cunningham, for the Department of Ed. And we'll also have Dr. Logan Hampton from Lane College in West Tennessee to talk about HBCU, and talk about funding in rural, historically Black colleges and universities. So until next time, folks, been a pleasure.
Thank you all.
Great.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast and website are those of Dr. Alan Pratt, Dr. Jared Bingham, and Dr. Christopher F. Silver, and do not represent the affiliated universities and or any organization affiliated with the hosts. This podcast and the accompanying material, including our website, represent the opinions of Dr. Alan Pratt, Dr. Jared Bingham, and Dr. Christopher F. Silver, and their guests to the show and website. The content here should not be taken as medical or professional advice and should be used at your own risk. The content here is for informational purposes only and should be understood as such. The Rural Voice podcast or its hosts do not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast, and the information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement. Further, the content of this podcast are the property of the National Rural Education Association and are protected under U.S. and international copyright and trademark law. No other use, including without limitation, reproduction, retransmission, or editing of this podcast may be made without prior written permission. By listening to this podcast, you agree to the terms and conditions, and while we make every effort to ensure that the information that we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors. Thank you.